It's okay. Oh, thanks. So the mission at the beginning of Erevin.
He's got two pages.
Yeah, I need to photocopy it. Yeah, okay. No, I don't want to bother you.
No.
Okay. Records a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanna Kamma about a Korah, and then a second machlokes about the rochav, the width of a, thank you so much, of a mavui. So let's go one by one. So the first machlokes, which is going to be about the height, the maximum height of a korah to be mater mavui, is the Mishnah says mavui shu gavoa lemala mi esrim ama. If the korah is too high up, it's above 20 ama. Well, let's assume that the purpose of the korah is a heker, so they should remind themselves that it's a mavui. And a person doesn't look all the way that high up. You know, 20 amah is a little bit too high. Like the Gemara says in Shabbos about a Ner Chanukah. The Ner Chanukah should not be too high up. You know, he could strain himself and see something above Esrim amah, but normally he doesn't do so. So whenever you need a heker, it's got to be within 20 amah. But the Gemara is going to take a whole different approach. The Gemara is going to assume that what we want to figure out is a definition of a Pesach. And the Gemara is going to stretch its arm out to the parshios that we're reading now, actually, in the last half of Shmos, about the Pesach HaChotzer, and, you know, the height of the Ulam, or the height of the Heichal, and so forth and so on. But right now, we're going to just formulate the machlokis here in cut and dry terms. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Tzara. So the Tanna Kamma says Yemait. Yemait means that if the korah is above 20 amah, he's got to lower the korah so to be no higher than 20 amah from the ground. Otherwise, it cannot be a tikkun for the mavui, to be matir tiltul in the mavui. So the Chachamim wanted to make sure that you look at this mavui and see it as a reshus hayochid, because since so many people come from the various batim and they spill into the mavui, it appears, it looks like a reshus harabim. And we don't want you to carry in reshus harabim on Shabbos, but we're going to make it into a reshus hayochid by closing it off, so to speak, by making a heker that this is a mavui, which on a deraisa level, as we said yesterday, has a din of reshus hayochid, because it's a mavui sasum, so it's closed on one side, and therefore it has three mechitzos, and that's enough, according to most Rishonim at least, to set up a reshus hayochid deraisa. But the Rabbanim consider it like a reshus harabim. People confuse it with a reshus harabim, and therefore they required, in order to be matir tiltul in this area, they made it, they wanted to make it obvious that it's a mavui, it's not a reshus harabim. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Eino tzar, you don't have to be mamait, and the Gemara is going to assume that he derives the height of a Pesach from what's called the Pesach ha'ulam, and the ulam was actually 40 amas high. Now presumably, and I hope I'm not mistaken here, Rabbi Yehuda would also require a certain maximum. That would be 40 amah. So let's say you had a korah that was 41 amah above the ground, then Rabbi Yehuda would also agree you might. Now what about the width of what's called the Pesach HaMavui, right? The opening into the Mavui. How far are the two walls of the mavui one from the other? Now, again, that's not really the question that we have to ask. I'm going to ask that question in a case where there's nothing between the two walls on this side, meaning on the side of the Mavi that goes into Sarabim, it's completely open. How much space is there between the two walls? How wide is the opening into this Mavli? And the Mishnah establishes again, in the name of the Chachamim, we'll see exactly what Rabbi Yehuda is going to say. It's interesting, keep in mind, make a footnote that Rabbi Yehuda's name is not mentioned in the Sefer, which implies that maybe he would agree in the Sefer. But be that as it may, how wide is wide and how wide is too wide to consider the Pesach of a Mavui such that the Chacham allows you to be metaltel the Mavui with a Korah or a Lechi? And the answer is, it's got to be up to, but not beyond, Eser Amos. If it's too wide, Eser Amos, then you might. Now in this case, you might probably means that you have to be so same, the Rochab, meaning you have to clog it up. Let's say put curtains there, or something else. And yesterday we said that the main terminology that we have to discuss is the difference between what's called a Pesach and a Pirtza. And a Pirtza means like something that breaks down the wall, so to speak. Parts. So if this Mavui is so open and it spills into Rishus HaRabim, it's called Parts Rishus HaRabim. And if it's Parts Rishus HaRabim as opposed to a Pesach from the Rishus HaRabim into the Mavui, if it's parutz from the Rishus HaRabim, then you cannot be metalta, you're also betiltal, even if you put a korah on top, because then it's considered like an extension of the Rishus HaRabim. Again, all this is midrabanan, because keep in mind, on a deraisa level, the Mavui is surrounded by three mechitzos, which makes it into Rishus HaYachid deraisa. But since the Rabbanan were worried about the fact that the Mavui functions almost like a Rishus HaRabim for all those who have their batim, you know, leading into the chutz or leading into the Mavui, therefore they have to find a way in which it's clear that the Mavui is not a Rishus HaRabim, and there are certain limitations. If the Mavui is Paritz Rishus HaRabim, because there's more than Eser Amos and Rochav, then a Korah just won't do it. That's not enough. And we're going to consider it like a Rishus HaRabim midrabanon, and we're going to ask the Tiltal, you're not allowed to be metaltal in such a Mavui. So can you imagine a person who wants to take something from his house into the Mavui on a Shabbos, if the Mavui opens up to Rishus HaRabim in a very open area, which is more than Eser Amos, which is called a Pirtza, then he cannot do so. He will be prohibited min rabbanan from taking something from his house into the Mavui. You know that a Mavui has ksalim, it has walls. Now, the Gemara always assumes that in ksalim there are like little spaces, you know, cubby holes, so to speak. And people used to actually hide things in the... So it would be, let's say for example, you needed keys to your house. That would be a contemporary example. I don't know if it would go back to the time of Chazal. Maybe even in the time of Chazal, they needed keys to the house. So you would take your key and you would hide it somewhere in the coastal of the Mavui, perhaps. And on your way back in, you know, all you have to do is pick up your key and take it to your house and open your house. But if you can't carry the key from your house into the Mavui, or vice versa, it's not going to help you. So if this Mavui lends itself to a tikkun, then you'd be allowed to do it with a korah or a lechi. But if it's too wide, and again, there's no blocking off space, so you have no curtains or walls. You know, later on, we're going to talk about a Mavui that has not only, you know, the walls of the Mavui itself, but at the entrance into the Mavui from Rishus HaRabim, it has two walls, you know, partial walls, half walls that jut out, and that's going to give you a Pesach of less than Eser Amos. So that's a wonderful candidate for Tikkun HaMavui through a Korah. However, there is one case where you're allowed to be metaken a very wide open Mavui, and that's called through Tzuras HaPesach. And the Mishnah says, Im yesh lo Tzuras HaPesach, which means you have two vertical lechis, right, two kanim, that what they call, you know, they go up on the two sides, which is called the shtei mechitzos, and then you put one flat board on top, lying on these two vertical boards, that's called the tzuras ha-pesach. It's then afal pishu rachav, even if the pesach is rachav me'aser amos, ain't tzarch lemait. Then, through this tzuras ha-pesach, which is considered like a fourth mechitza, that sets up the mavui as a rishus hayochid, and then you could be metakin the mavui with a korah. Now you and I might have said, well, why do we need a korah? Because we already have a tzuras ha-pesach. But if you look at the language of the Mishnah, which has to be understood, it says afal pishu rochav me'aser amos ein tzarch lemait. It's interesting, ein tzarch lemait. What the Mishnah might be saying is that you don't have to be mamait the korah on the tzuras ha-pesach, if you follow what I mean. So we don't care how tall the tzuras ha-pesach is, even though it's very tall. It's above, you know, it's above esrima. It might be okay. I don't know. But the other way of learning it is to say that even though it's rochav eser amos, you can still use it as, you consider it as a mavui, and then you'll need a heker. But again, I would insist that, I don't know if you agree with me, we'll have to work it out as we go through the sugya, that in this case, since you have a tzuras ha-pesach, you don't need any other sort of tikkun mavui. The tzuras ha-pesach has two lechis on both sides, right and left, and it has a korah going straight across horizontally on top. Maybe in that case, you don't need any additional heker, and the tzuras ha-pesach is enough, and that suffices to be metakin the mavui, even though, and that's the chiddush of our Mishnah, the mavui has an opening into Rishus HaRavim, which is more than Eser Amos, because the tzuras ha-pesach is considered like a fourth mechitza. Okay, so yesterday we did the first sugya here in the Masechta, and that was to explain the difference between the Mishnah here and the Mishnah in Sukkah. I'll just mention a quick review so that we can start the new sugya for today. The Mishnah in Sukkah doesn't mention any sort of a takanta, which means any sort of a remedy to the problem of schach that's above 20 amma. In the case of the Korah in our Mishnah for a tikkun mona, tikkun mavui, the Mishnah recommends yamait. It tells us that you just drop the Korah lower than eser amma. Lower than eser amma. But in the case of the Mishnah in Sukkah, it just says that if the schach is above 20 amma, the sukkah is psula. Why didn't the Mishnah go ahead and give us a takana and say you might? So just to summarize, the Gemara gives two answers. The first answer is that sukkah is doraisa, and that means that we already know about a sukkah. We don't have to introduce the entity of a sukkah. The mitzvah of sukkah is already written in the Torah. And now, the Mishnah at the beginning of Sukkah is just going to tell you when your Sukkah is psula. But in the case of a Mavui, there is no Torah Shebichsav for a Mavui. Nowhere in the Torah does it mention a word about a Mavui. So it's an entirely rabbinic enterprise. So the Mishnah says, well, you have a Mavui and you have a Korah, and you have to make sure the Korah is below Esrim Tvachin. That's called Tani Takanta. And the second answer to the Gemara is that in the case of Sukkah, it would take a langa richus to teach us how you'd be metakin a Sukkah, because there are many, many different possible psulim in a Sukkah. For example, let's say you only have two defanos, so the tikkun would be at a third dofen. Or let's say the Sukkah is above 20 amas, so then you'd have to lower it, the schach, below 20 amas. If let's say the defanos of the sukkah are less than asar tvach, so you'd have to raise the defanos. Let's say there's too much sun in the sukkah, so you'd have to make sure that there's enough schach to guarantee that tzel sum rub sum acham. So there's so many different psulim in the sukkah that the Mishnah didn't find that this was the appropriate place to give me a takanta. In the case of a mavui, there's only one issue in the mavui. And that is that you have to make a tikkun for the mavui with a heker of either a korah or a lechi. So the Mishnah just has to tell you, you might. Then that's the end of the story. There are no other requirements to be machshir the mavui, to be taking the money, other than guaranteeing that the korah is within 20 amas of the ground. So this leads us to the sugya for today. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. And you'll see that if you count down from the Gemara itself, it's approximately 10 lines down. And the first word in the line is Takanta. Does everybody have that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Gemara wants to explain, why is it that according to the Tanakhama, the Korah has to be below Esrim Amma? And why is it that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't care and he's not makbid? He's okay with the fact that the Korah is above Esrim Amma. What are they arguing about? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mara. Chachonim, meaning the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, who disqualifies the Korah that's above 20 Amma, Lolam dua ela mipischo shel heichal. I have a little bit of a picture here, just a second. All right, we don't need any diagrams, do we? When we get to more complicated sugyas, I have a picture book that I bought. You were the one, Usher, told me about the book?
Yeah.
So my son was able to get it for me. Now I'm asking him to get me a Gemara. You know, a picture book is fine. So take a look, Usher. If you don't mind opening this, you'll see on the first page a picture of the Ulam and the Heichal. So lolam du'ela mipischo shel heichal, which means the following: when you go inside the Beis Hamikdash, you know, deep in what we call pnimi, the inner part of the Beis Hamikdash, you're almost at the Kodesh Kadoshim. So what you get to is called a heichal, and the heichal is considerably lower than what's called the ulam. We'll get to the ulam in a second when we get to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda and Mishnah. Now, what was the height of the Heichal? The height of the Heichal was Esrim Amma. The Gemara is going to derive this very shortly, but let's accept it now as axiomatic. So the height of the Pesach Ohel, the Pesach HaHeichal is 20 Amma. The key word here is Pesach. Okay, because later on we're going to have a different kind of a Pesach, which is called the Pesach HaChotzer. But now we're talking about the Pesach, right? So it's this picture here, I think, right? The picture is a little bit, you know what, it's not such a great picture. We need a different book for this. It's called HaMishkan. There's a picture book of the Mishkan.
Yeah, yeah.
That would help us a little bit more. So again, what's the height, Rabosai, what's the height of the Pesach HaHeichal? 20 Amma. Can we get that down? And we're going to say that the following, that if you want to get a Pesach, then a Pesach has to be modeled after the Pesach of the Heichal, which means it cannot be more than 20 Amas high. After that, it's not called a Pesach anymore. I don't know exactly what you'd call it when it's too high up. I call it some sort of, I guess, architectural structure, but don't call it a Pesach. It's too high up to be called a Pesach. That's the Shita of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. And the law of the Korah is that the Korah is a tikkun for a Pesach. But again, a Pesach, we said, has a maximum height of 20 Amma. If it's above 20 Amma, then it's not Ke'ena Pesach Shal Heichal, and therefore you cannot be mitakin it through a Korah that's above 20 Amma. Now, I want to just quote to you the words of the Ritva. He says the following: V'afal pi She'en lo zedin shal Pesach Mamish Shebelo kana mikan v'kan, shebelo kana mikan v'kan mikan, ein zu tzuras ha-pesach. The Ritva is bothered by the following question: why should we consider the opening into a Mavui as a Pesach? I mean, the whole premise of the Gemara is that the opening into a Mavui is called a Pesach. Again, whether you can compare that Pesach and derive it from this Pesach, meaning the Pesach HaHeichal or the Pesach HaUlam, that's going to be a subject of Machlokas. But the basic premise here is that the Mavui has a Pesach. Now the truth is that it's not exactly a Pesach, says the Ritva. Why? Because a Pesach has to have two pillars that are going vertical with another beam horizontally on top, as like we saw in the Mishnah called the Tzuras HaPesach. Here we're talking about a case where there's no lechi on one side or on the other side, and all you have is a korah on top. And therefore the Ritva says that you cannot take this Gemara literally and assume that the opening into a Mavui is a Pesach. Again, it could be a Pesach if you had a Tzuras HaPesach. But this is not a Tzuras HaPesach, this is only a korah. So if it's open on both sides without any sort of a kon mikan, it's not really a Pesach. So the Ritva says it doesn't matter. That doesn't bother the Gemara, because the takana of a korah is to consider the korah as if it was a korah on a Pesach. Even though, again, technically it's not a Pesach because you don't have the two vertical poles coming up on the two sides. Rabbi Yehuda, what does he do? Why does he say that a korah is considered the korah of the Pesach even though it's above 20 amma? Lo lamda ela mipischo shel ulam. Okay, so if we had a picture of the Beis HaMikdash, you'll see that on the outside of the Beis HaMikdash, closer to the entry, you have what's called a very high opening, a Pesach, with a very high ceiling to it, and that's called the Pesach HaUlam. It's only when you move further in, Pnimi, as we said before, towards the Kodesh Kadoshim, then you get to the Pesach HaHeichal. So the Pesach HaUlam is much higher than the Pesach of the Heichal. And now we're going to try to get into some of the details. So maybe I would ask you, Usher, if you want to do me a favor, if you could open up here to the Chumash. I'll tell you where to look in our parsha, actually. It should be in Shmos Chav Zayin, Pasuk Yud Ches. Okay, but just leave that on the side if you can. Correct? Chav Zayin Yud Ches. And then we're going to skip to Lamed Ches Tezvah. Those are going to be two very key psukim. Okay, but before we get to that, so it says the following. Disnan, we learned in a Mishnah in Masechta Midos, which gives us the measurements of the Beis HaMikdash, and it says the following. Pischo shel heichal gavo esrim amo verochbo eser amos. So far we're doing really well here, because the Tanakhama wants to equate a Pesach in the case of a Mavui for Tikkun Korah to the Pesach of the Heichal, so that the dimensions of a Pesach for our purposes in Mavui are derived from, you know, it's the sort of like the archetype is going to be the Pesach of the Heichal. Well, what were the dimensions in terms of Gova and Rochav of the Pischo Shel Heichal? Well, the Mishnah says explicitly that the Gova was 20 Amma, the Rochav was 10 Amos. And that's exactly what it says in our Mishnah, according to the Tanakhama, that if you have a Korah that is above Esrim Amma, then you might. And if you have a Rochav which is beyond Esr Amma, then you might. Why? Because it has to be a mirror image of the Pischo Shel Heichal. So your Av, so to speak, your archetype of what is a Pesach, what is your definition of a Pesach, is going to be 20 amma in height and 10 amma in width. Now, Rabosai, supposing, I'm just asking you a theoretical question to see if we're all on board. What happens if I would prove to you from elsewhere in the Torah that a Pesach is, let's say, 10 Amma, and the Rochav is 5 Amma? Would that bother you? Would that be a Kasha? No, it wouldn't be a Kasha. I'll tell you why. We're looking for the maximum of what's still considered a Pesach. It could be that smaller openings for sure are considered a Pesach. But we want to know, when does it become so large that it loses its shame Pesach? As long as I can prove to you in one area of the Torah, and this is going to be Rabbi Yehuda's argument against Chachamim, that the Pesach goes as high as 20 Amma, as wide as Eser Amma, that's enough. You may find elsewhere in the Torah that you could have a Pesach that is lower than 20 Amma. That's not a kasha. I want to know how to max out the Pesach. And then the Mishnah continues and tells us Vishal Ulam, meaning the Pesach of the Ulam, was Gadol Arba'im Amma V'Rochva Esrim Amma. So we just multiply it by 2. So the Chachamim are going to derive their conclusion about the Pesach in the case of a Mavui from Pesach HaHechal, which means 20 height and 10 wide. And we're going to see that Rabbi Yehuda is going to derive his conclusion from the Pesach HaUlam, which has a shear of 40 Amma in height and 20 Amma in width. The truth be told, that right now logic sort of compels us towards the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, because as I said before, as long as I could show you, I could demonstrate that a Pesach is so high, like the Pesach of the Ulam, it doesn't bother me if you have other structures that have a lower Pesach or a more narrow Pesach. That as long as I find, you know, my peg to hang my hat on, and there is such a thing as a Pesach, which the Torah calls a Pesach, and it has the gova of our boy Mama. That's good enough. So I'm not sure what the Chacham are going to answer to Rabbi Yehuda, unless they're going to claim that nowhere in the Torah does the Torah speak about the Pesach of the Ulam. Ushneim mikra echad darshu. So in the parsha of Shlomim, that's how Rashi learns this. Other Rishonim say it's not limited to Shlomim. This halacha called Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, which has to do with the shechita of a carbon Shlomim. But what's important for us is the phrase Pesach Ol Moed. Now the question is, which Pesach is that? And since we're talking about Ol Moed, and we're talking about the Shechita, we're talking about the area that's inside the Beis HaMikdash. You know, you're going deep, deep into the Beis HaMikdash, and you're entering into the Heichal. You're about to enter into the Heichal. You don't have to enter into the Heichal to do the Shechita, because you could shecht it even Pesach Ol Moed before you go into the Heichal. But nevertheless, this phrase of Pesach Ol Moed is a reference to the Pesach of the Heichal. But the Gemara says that really depends upon how we view the relationship between the Heichal and the Ulam. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just say by introduction, Kedusha, sanctity, dissipates, or shall I say expands. In Hebrew, you'll translate it for me to the English, it's called hispashtus, lehit pashet. How would you say that in English? To spread out? Is there a better word for that? Expansion. Kedusha expands. Now, the way Kedusha expands is that you start with something that's very, very intense, and then it expands. This is true for Zman. For example, we have what's called Tosefa Shabbos. So you have the Shabbos, and then the Shabbos and its Kedusha expands in both ways. You'll have it in Shvius as well. Or in the case of Makom, it could be that all of Eretz Yisrael is just an extension of the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. There's a Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos who says that basically Eretz Yisrael is Kedushas Migdash, and most Rishonim would agree that Yerushalayim is certainly Kedushas Migdash. But again, the Kedusha, as it spreads, as it expands, it goes down levels. So the highest level of Kedusha would be the Kodesh Kedoshim. Even within the Kodesh Kedoshim, there's going to be an area that's even more holy than the rest of the Kodesh Kedoshim, like Bein HaKruvim. And we go on and on and on, and we start with, you know, the Kodesh Kedoshim, and then we expand to the Heichal, and from the Heichal to the Ulam, and from the Ulam to Yerushalayim and the Har Bayis, and finally we get to all of Eretz Yisrael. So that's a mission in Kalim called Eser Kedushosheim, that there are 10 levels of Kedusha, and we start with the highest level of Kedusha, and it expands. Now, what's the relationship between Heichal and Ulam? So let's take, for example, the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that it's all one Kedusha. In other words, that when you expand the Kedusha from the Heichal, you know, the Heichal has a separate Kedusha because it has the you know, the Mizbech HaPnimi, and it has the Menorah and the Shulchan, right? All these very, very holy items that are in the Heichal, which is very close to the Kodesh Kedoshim. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda understands that the expansion of the Heichal and its Kedusha swallows up the whole area called the Ulam. That's called Kedusha Achas. Well, let's start with the Chachamim Shita. The Chachamim say, the Rabbanan Savri, Kedusha Heichal Luchud, and Kedusha Ulam Luchud. In other words, don't equate the Kedusha of the Ulam, which is a lower level of Kedusha, with the Kedusha of the Heichal. The Heichal is considered the highest level of Kedusha, that's called Ohel Moed, in the language of the Pasuk that we saw before, Shchato Pesach Ohel Moed. The Ulam is a lower level of Kedusha, and there's certain Avodos, therefore. Now, wait a minute, I just want to ask one question. What difference does it make? Very nice. You know, the Rabbanan is saying, well, the Heichal has one Kedusha, and the Ulam has a different Kedusha, a distinct Kedusha. And Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, no, the Ulam also has the Kedusha of the Heichal. What is that all about? I mean, my Nafkimina. So it could have Nafkimina, Gabi Tmeim, you know, who's Chayv Kares, where, what, and so forth and so on. But our Sugya holds that the Nafkimina is going to be Gabi Avoda, which means the following. There are certain Avodos that require Heichal. So let's say, for example, I would take the menorah out of the Heichal, and it's in the Ulam, and I would light the menorah in the Ulam. So the Tarakaba would say, you're not Yotzi the Mitzvah. Why? Because the Kedusha of Ulam is a separate entity. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says you'd be Yotze. Why? Because the Kedusha of Ulam is an extension of the Kedusha of Heichal. Obviously, it's not the same identical Kedusha. L'chatchila, I want to light the menorah inside. I want to, you know, put the lechem haponim on the shulchan inside, etc., etc. But b'di'evit, if I did the avoda of the Heichal in the Ulam, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I'd be Yotze, because the Kedusha HaHeichal expands and swallows up the Ulam. And the Ulam has not its own its own Kedusha, its own identity, but rather it has the Kedusha of what? Of the Heichal. That's the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim, on the other hand, say that what? That Kedusha Se'ulam is a separate entity. You know, those Avodos that require Heichal would be Psulos if you would perform them outside the Heichal in the Ulam.
I don't understand one thing. We seem to be making confusing the Mishkan and the Mikdash.
Well, that's going to be the whole next sugya that we're going to learn. You know, the Gemara is going to try to say that Mishkan is called Mikdash and Mikdash is called Mishkan. So hang in there for.
Because the Mishkan doesn't have an Ulam. You only have a Heichal and the Torah.
So that I don't know.
There was nothing 40 amos high in the Midbar. The Krushim went up to 10.
I thought you were asking a different question. You know, how can we learn Dinam based on Migdash from the Mishkan?
It's just different. There was no Ulam in the Mishkan.
So I plead the fifth on that one, Mitch. You know, maybe we'll talk about that. I don't know the answer to your question. All right, let's just put your question on the back burners for the time being. and let's see what we can get out of the pashtus in the sugya. The Gemara says the following: Rabbanan sabri kedushas heichal lechud kedushas ulam lechud. So the kedushas ulam is a low level of kedusha, and the heichal is considered the ol moed. And therefore, any avoda, as we said before, that requires heichal would be possible in the ulam. Now we get back to the pasuk that we started with. V'chiksiv Pesach ol moed. Right, it says v'shchato Pesach ol moed. So how do we interpret this? And the answer is that we're talking about the ol moed of the Mishkan, and that ol moed is the heichal. Heichal ksiv. So the pasuk Pesach ol moed is referring to the heichal, not to the ulam. The ulam is not considered the ol moed. So the word Pesach, and as I keep telling you over and over again, in this sugya the key word is Pesach, because we want to know the dimensions of a Pesach. It's derived from Pesach Ol Moed, which is the Heichal, and the Gova, the height of the Pesach Ol Moed, meaning the Pesach Heichal, was 20 Amo. Rabbi Yehuda Sover Heichal the Ulam Kedusha Achasi, which means if you did the Avoda that requires heichal in the ulam, then you would be yotze, and therefore the ulam is considered part of, included in ol moed. The ulam is included in ol moed. V'chiksiv Pesach ol moed. So now we go back to our pasuk again. Pesach ol moed. Atshavayahu d'chsiv. This pasuk of Pesach ol moed is referring not just to the heichal but also to the ulam, which means that if you have the Pesach HaUlam, it's considered Pesach HaMoed. The Pesach HaUlam was 40 amos high, as we said before. That's also called a Pesach, because Pesach HaMoed is referring to the Ulam as well. So now we have another interpretation. L'Rabbi Yehuda Nami Kedushas Ulam L'Chud U'Kedushas Heichal L'Chud. So when the Torah says Pesach HaMoed, it's referring specifically and exclusively to the Pesach HaHeichal, because only the Pesach HaHeichal has the Kedusha of Ol Moed, and therefore any avodah that you would perform that requires Pesach HaOel in the Heichal, and you implemented these avodos outside the Heichal in the Ulam, would be disqualified. V'hacha, but here, as far as Mavui is concerned, Hainu time of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning is the chsiv. It says El Pesach Ulam Habayis. Now, again, there is no such pasuk, but let's just imagine that there was such a pasuk, just to get the flow of the Gemara. What he's trying to derive from this fictitious pasuk is that the ulam also has a Pesach. You know, as the Torah went out of its way to call the ulam a Pesach, as if the ulam is also a Pesach. And as we said before, as long as you have a Pesach, which is that high, and it's still called a Pesach, and we know that the ulam was 40 amos high, then that's enough. That's enough to be considered what? To be considered a Pesach. So the Rishonim will ask the question, where do we find this phrase, Pesach Ulam Abayis, in the Mikra? We don't see it in the Mikra. So some say that this phrase, El Pesach Ulam Abayis, is really an integration of different Lishonos of two Psukim. So there's a Pasuk in Sefer Yechezkel which says, Ulam Habayis. Ulam Habayis. So again, there's no mention of Pesach. However, that pasuk, which is in Perek Mem of Yechezkel, which says Ulam Habayis, is another pasuk in Perek Mem Zion in Yechezkel and elsewhere in Sefer Yechezkel, where it says Pesach Habayis. So we're going to take these two psukim, Ulam Habayis and Pesach Habayis, and we're going to combine them together, and it's according to Rabbi Yehuda, and that's called El Pesach Ulam Habayis. That's one approach. And you'll see this in Tosvis in the name of the Re. So again, as we said before, there's some sort of a combination of psukim. The Ritva has a different approach. Fine. That's what we have for now. So the Chachamim are going to disagree, and you can imagine why. Rabbanan, the Rabbanan say, Yaviksiv, if the Torah would have said El Pesach Ulam, but we don't have such a thing, El Pesach Ulam, right? We have Pesach Abayis, and we have Ulam Abayis, but it doesn't say Pesach Ulam. It's Hashli the Tziv, El Pesach Ulam Abayis. Oh, he adds another point here, and that is, it says Pesach Ulam Habayis, which means that the word Pesach, again, everything, the whole sugya revolves around one single word, Pesach, and the word Pesach doesn't refer to the Ulam, it refers to the Bayis, which is the Heichal. So when it says El Pesach Ulam Habayis, the reason why the Torah adds the word Habayis is because the word Pesach is not referring to the Ulam, but rather to the bias that's pasuach li'ulam, meaning if you're coming from the Heichal and you're exiting the Beis HaMikdash, so you enter into the Ulam, and that's called the Ulam HaBayis. But the Pesach itself is the Pesach of the Heichal. So again, once again, you're walking out of the Heichal. If you look up, you will be seeing the Pesach HaBayis, meaning the Pesach through which you exit, in this case, through the Ulam of the Bayis, meaning on your way out of the Bayis. So what's above your head is 20 Amma. Why? Because you're in the Pesach of the Heichal. So when it says Bayis HaPasuach Li Ulam, that's a reference to the Heichal. And that's considered a Pesach. But nowhere does the Torah consider the Pesach HaUlam as a Pesach. So in my footnote here, he quotes the Ritva. The Ritva says that Divrei Chachamim, he says, Ein ze posuk echad, el she posuk echad nemar ulam habayis. And then there's another posuk that says Pesach habayis. So Rabbi Yehuda says that when it says Pesach habayis, it means the Pesach ulam. And the Rabbanan reject this, because even the pasuk that says Ulam HaBayis, it's a reference to the Bayis. The Bayis is here the Heichal, not the Ulam. And when it says Ulam, it means Ulam Lifnei HaBayis. So even the pasuk Pesach HaBayis is a reference to the Heichal. So to make a long story short, according to the second interpretation of the Gemara, the first interpretation is whether or not the word Ol Moed includes the Ulam, because the Torah says Pesach Ol Moed. So if Ol Moed, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for example, includes even the Ulam, then clearly the Torah is considered the Ulam as a Pesach, that the Ulam has a Pesach and it's 40 Amos high. The second interpretation is that clearly even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that Ol Moed includes only the Heichal and not the Ulam, but Rabbi Yehuda says that there's some other, shall we say, combination of words in Tanakh, in Sefer Yechezkel, that if you put them all together, you end up with Pesach Ulam. And the Chacham say, no, the Pesach in Yechezkel is not the Pesach of the Ulam, but rather it's the Pesach HaBayis. And when it says Pesach Ulam, it means Pesach Ulam HaBayis. And that Pesach is the Pesach HaHechal and not the Pesach HaUlam. Now the Gemara has a kasha on this derivation from the pasuk Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, and the Gemara asks a kasha. V'haksive hai b'mishkan ksiv. So we'll see what we can do with this. So the pasuk here is referring to a mishkan, right? When it says Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, it's referring to the mishkan. The mishkan was in the midbar. You know, we're not referring here to the Beis HaMikdash in this pasuk. This pasuk is in where's the Parshas Truma, I think, right? And there it doesn't mention an ulam, right? So we're talking about the Pesach Ol Moed, which is considered the Pesach HaHechal. And the question is, when we get to the Beis HaMikdash, we really don't know exactly what the height of the Pesach was in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, I think what the Gemara is asking, if I understand correctly, you'll correct me if you have another pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara is saying, how do you know that just because the Mishkan had a certain in this case, the Pesach Ha'echad had a certain dimension, a certain height, which is Eser Amo, right? I'm sorry, which is Esrim Amo. How do you know that that's the same height as the Heichal in the Beis HaMikdash? Let's say that I convince you that the Heichal in the Beis HaMikdash was only 10 Amos high, correct? We've been assuming that the Pesach HaHeichal was 20 Amos high. Well, that's true just 1 second. I think I'm saying it the wrong way around. Let me switch it around. Yeah. I think the Gemara is asking the following question. This pasuk Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, from which we're deriving the Pesach of the Oel, of the Heichal, as being similar to the Pesach of the Heichal in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Pesach HaHeichal in the Beis HaMikdash was 20 Amos high, but not in the Mishkan. The Mishkan had Kroshim, and on top of the Kroshim, there was airspace, right? There was no opening of any sort, right? The highest opening you can imagine in the Mishkan would have been Eser Amos. That's what I think the Gemara is asking. Are you like that? Great. If you're on board with me, I'm very happy. All right? So again, the height of the Kroshim in the Mishkan was Eser Amos. So how can you tell me that the Pesach indicated in the Pasuk in the Mishkan, which says Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, was 20 Amos high? You know, that's not Shayach. Because the Heichal in the Mishkan couldn't have been higher than 10 Amos. So the Gemara answers, Ashkechan Mishkan de Ikre Migdash, Umigdash de Ikre Mishkan. Now let's try to understand the Gemara. The Gemara is saying that we're going to find in the Psukim that the Mishkan, more than once, is called a Migdash. Okay, like for Shachanti Besoch, it says Basuli Migdash, right? We'll get to that pasuk later. But what I'm just pointing out here is that the Mishkan is called a Migdash. And we're going to see also, not only is the Mishkan called a Migdash, but the Migdash is also called a Mishkan. And we're going to derive that from Sukkim as well. Okay, fine. So what's the import of that whole discussion? So again, I'm going to read to you the Ritva. The Ritva says, Afal pisha ikra posuk, Pesach ol moed, nemar ala Mishkan, Hareu ke'ilu nichtav gam ala migdash. V'yesh l'umod mimenu ala psochim shoyu b'migdash, shekruyim gam heim Pesach. So again, the ultimate purpose of this exercise that we're about to embark upon is to establish that the Pesach in the Mishkan is also the Pesach in the Migdash, meaning the Shem Pesach, you know, that concept of a Pesach. Now we saw already in the Midos, in Masechta Midos, and the Mishnah says that the Pischo Shel Heichal Gavo Esrim Mam. Obviously that's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, not to the Mishkan. The Mishkan couldn't possibly have had a Gova of more than Eser Amos, because the Kroshim, as we said before, were not taller than Eser Amos. But the Ritva says that even though the Pasuk Pesach Ol Moed in its context is referring to the Mishkan, which means that the word Pesach would have to be Eser Amos and not Eser Mama, but we're going to have some sort of a, I don't know if I can just, don't take me literally here, but some sort of like Gzeira Shava, as if this Pasuk was referring to the Migdash. Why? Because the Migdash is also called the Mishkan, as we'll see. And therefore, if I take this Pasuk and I superimpose it, I graft it onto the Beis HaMikdash, and we know that the Pesach of the Heichal was 20 Amah high in the Beis HaMikdash, is then we can use this pasuk as if the Torah is defining Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash itself. So we're going to use the Pesach of the Heichal in the Mikdash as our determining criterion for what is considered a Pesach. Do you follow? So we're doing a kind of a law of, I don't know, transmutation. We're taking the pasuk out of its context. The pasuk in its context is referring to what? To the Mishkan, and therefore it would only be 10 amos high. But we're using that pasuk of Shchato Pesach Omoy as if it were written in the Mikdash, because the Mikdash is also considered a Mishkan. So the fact that the Torah is going to teach us that the Mikdash is considered a Mishkan allows me to take the Beis HaMikdash and sort of, you know, integrate it into this pasuk of Ushchato Pesach Oel Moed, even though that pasuk is referring to a Pesach that's only 10 amos high, but now the pasuk is in effect referring to a Pesach that's 20 amos high, because whatever it says about the Mishkan, we can superimpose that onto the Mikdash, not exactly in terms of how many, you know, what the dimensions are, but in terms of the Shem Pesach. So once I know that I can take the word Pesach from Mishkan and apply it to Mikdash, and specifically says the Tanakhama, the Pesach of the Heichal, then whatever was the height of the Pesach of the Heichal in the Beis HaMikdash will now teach me what is a Pesach. What is the height, maximum height of a Pesach? And in Beis HaMikdash, the Pesach HaHeichal was 20 amos high. So the Gemara is now going to prove from a statement of Shmuel that this pasuk, Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, is referring not just to the Mishkan, but also to the Mikdash. Which is really fascinating when you think about it. It's almost like time is a spiral, if you follow me. You know, the Torah says certain things addressing that period of time as if it were addressing a later period of time. So we're not up to the Beis HaMikdash yet, we're only up to the Mishkan. But what the Torah is stipulating with regard to the Mishkan is applicable to the Mikdash, to the Beis HaMikdash that's going to be built by Shlomo Melech way later on in history. And therefore, when the Torah is telling me that the entrance into the Heichal is called a Pesach, it's talking not only about the Heichal in the Mishkan, but also about the Heichal in the Mikdash. And Shmuel is going to tell me that specifically this pasuk, Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, which has to do with the earliest time that you can shech karbonos on any daily basis, it's got to be what's called Pesach Ol Moed. That law of Shmuel derived from this pasuk is going to apply to Mikdash as well, as if this pasuk was instructing us in the law of Shchitas HaKarbon in the Beis HaMikdash, even though the Beis HaMikdash is way down the line. Ha'amar Hadi Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel Shlomim Sheshchaton Kodem Psichas Dalsos HaHeichal. Again, we said before that the Ol Moed is a reference to the Heichal, and they had to open the doors of the Heichal. The doors of the Beis HaMikdash and the doors of the Heichal were closed, were locked during the nighttime, closed for business, right? There's no business. And if you want to shecht any karbon, the earliest time you can shecht it in the morning is after Psichas Dalsos HaHeichal. So let's say we determine that time X, whatever it is, we'll call it T1, that time is the time of Psichas Dalsos HaHeichal. And we have to know whether that's determined objectively or it changes on any day. But that is the earliest time for Shchato. Right? So it's got to be Shchato Pesach Ol Moed. Pesach Ol Moed means when the Pesach of the Ol Moed is open. And the Ol Moed is a reference to the Heichal. So the shchitah was done at a time when the doors of the heichal were locked, then the shchitah is psula. You're going to have to replace that karbon with a different karbon. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, the Torah is telling me that in the Mishkan there's a psul of Shlomim Sheshenishkatu Kodem Psichas Dalsol Seheichal. But what does that mean in terms of Shkita Shlomim in the Beis HaMikdash itself? Ella, but we have no choice. We have to assume that that whatever the Torah says in terms of stipulating requirements of the avoda in the Mishkan, those regulations and those conditions apply to the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. And even though the name Beis HaMikdash indicates a different entity, but no, Mishkan is also Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash is also a Mishkan. Hello, we must conclude, says the Gemara, that Ashkan Migdash, the Ikre Mishkan, or Mishkan the Ikre Migdash. Now, Rabosai, I would submit the following. I don't have access to any sources to prove what I'm about to tell you. But I would tell you the following. That the Gemara does not mean that Mishkan equals Migdash. That's impossible. You can't say that the Mishkan is a Migdash. I mean, there are two different names. But what the Gemara does mean is that the Kedushas Mishkan is a Kedushas Migdash. And I'll tell you what I have in mind. Let's say, for example, we would talk about the Iser of Bama. Right? You know that there's a lav d'oraisa to be makriv a carbon on a bama outside the Beis HaMikdash. That would not apply to the Mishkan. And I would even go a step further. There are many, many Mishkanos. Right, there's a Mishkan in Shiloh, there's going to be a Mishkan in Nov and in Givon. There are many, there's a whole slew of Mishkanos, and the one in Shiloh actually lasted for, I think, 369 years, a long period of time in Jewish history. And that's a Mishkan, that's not a Migdash. A Migdash is unique, why? Because the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech, once built, generates an Iser of Hakrova anywhere in the face of the earth. Now, the Mishkan, I would say, is a temporary Beis HaMikdash, meaning during a certain period of time, it has Kedushas Migdash, right? The Kedushas Migdash applies to the Mishkan. But I'll give you an example. What happens after Churban HaMishkan, right? Today, if I go to Shiloh, let's say, I don't know if the, I have to ask the archaeologist, but let's say I can determine that this spot is where the Mishkan of Shiloh stood for almost four centuries, like three and a half centuries. Would anybody tell me that there's Kedusha, the sanctity to that place? Yeah, I'm all in favor of visiting Shiloh, don't misunderstand me, but it has no Kedusha to it. But the Makom HaMikdash, that has Kedusha even Bisman HaZeh. Because the Gemara says that even Laman the Omar, the Kedusha says, Tzil Kitchel Shaita Velo Kitchel Asit Lava. That's not how we pass it, but let's say that we hold Kitchel Shaita Velo Kitchel Asit Lava. That doesn't apply to the Makom HaMikdash. You know, which by the way has implications even today about who's allowed to go where, you know what I'm saying? But that's because Mikdash is a separate Kedusha of Kedusha's Mikdash. I'm willing to, well, my reputation in Kodshim is a very low reputation, but whatever low reputation I have in Kodshim, because I'm very limited in my understanding of Kodshim, I would stake my reputation on the fact that Mishkan is not Migdash. They are two separate entities. But there is Kedushas Migdash while the Mishkan is standing, not a full-fledged Kedushas Migdash. As I said, it would not generate an Iser Bama of Hakrama B'Bama. But Lagabe, most dinim, you know, whatever the Torah tells you about Mishkan, those requirements will apply to Migdash as well. It's almost like a kalvachomer, so to speak. If I tell you that there's a certain requirement, let's say psichas dalsos ahechal for shchitas hakarbonos as a requirement for karbonos in Mishkan, then almost ipso facto through a kalvachomer, certainly that limitation and that requirement of psichas dalsos ahechal would apply in the Migdash, and that's what Shmuel's point was. So the Gemara says, Bishleim of Migdash the Ikre Mishkan. I can understand that the Mishkan, the Migdash is greater than Mishkan, so to speak. It's like if you had two circles, then the Migdash would be the widest circle that includes the Mishkan as well. Dichsiv, the Pasuk says, now this is interesting. This Pasuk is in the Tochacha, which foretells all the Golos. And yet the Torah says, Vinasati es mishkani besochechem. Now, this is very strange because this pasuk is written in the future tense, and God the divine promise here is that I will set up my mishkan in the midst of Klal Yisrael. Well, what's going on over here? This pasuk is at the end of Sefer Vayikra. The Mishkan was already completely built in Sefer Shmos. So what's this what's this word here, Mishkan, referring to? You can't say Vinasati, sometime in the future I will offer you a Mishkan of my Shekhinah. It just doesn't make any sense. Ella, but you have to assume that the word Mishkan here in this context is referring to the Beis HaMikdash, meaning God is prophesizing and promising that in the future we will build the Beis HaMikdash. And yet what word does he use to call it the Beis HaMikdash? He calls it the Mishkan. So therefore when I see the word Mishkan, I can derive halachos in Mikdash, because the Mishkan is also include the terminology Mishkan also includes the Beis HaMikdash itself. So getting back to the story of Shmuel, right, the ruling of Shmuel that you need dalsos, etc., that's going to apply in the Mikdash as well, because the word Mishkan includes Mikdash. But now the Gemara wants to know the other direction. Okay, the other direction. And once again, we're going to have the Ritva here. Why does the Gemara need it to go in both directions? Anyway, let's just get the Gemara down straight. Ela Mishkan de Ikre Migdash Minolan. How do you know that the Mishkan itself is called a Migdash? So the Ritva says the following. We are trying to figure out now what the word Pesach means, in order to determine whether we have a Pesach HaMavui. And the premise here of the Tanakhama is that the Pesach HaMavui is going to be derived from the Pesach of the Heichal, and that means 20 Amos high. All we have to do in order to establish that is prove that the Mikdash is called a Mishkan. So that when the Torah says regarding a Mishkan, it says Ushchato Pesach Ol Moed, then that Pesach, which is referring to the Mishkan, is also referring to the Beis HaMikdash. Why then does the Gemara feel compelled to go the other direction to prove to you that the Mishkan is also called the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara is going to quote a couple of psukim to prove that. So he writes the following: Elohoil v'emes hadavar shegama Mishkan nikra Mikdash. Mivareres haGemara gam dover zeh. If you're following, this is a case of what I call agav grora. Have you ever heard that phrase, agav grora? Yeah. Meaning, once I get to this point, I'll go one step further. But what's happening here is that we really don't need to prove that the Mishkan is called the Mikdash. Once we've proven that the Mishkan is a terminology that includes Mikdash, and the Mikdash is called a Mishkan, we've already achieved that goal, because then Pesach Ol Moed, and that means the Pesach HaHeichal, is referring to the Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Pesach HaHeichal, the Beis HaMikdash, was how tall? Okay. Was 20 Amos tall. So this is Agav Gror. So I'll just take one more minute of your time. The Gemara says, Elam, if you're going to derive from Midich Siv, Vinasu Hakas Siv, Nosei HaMikdash, Veikimu Es HaMishkan Al Boam. So you see that the word Migdash is being used to the Mishkan, but actually, if you think about it, what were the Kahas, which is one third of the Levim, what was their job when it says Nosei HaMikdash? They didn't carry the Beis HaMikdash. That wasn't their job. Their job was to carry the Aron, right? They were the Holy of Holies. And there's a lot of discussion in the Machshava world as to why the Kohasim were chosen for this Holy of Holies of carrying the Aron. So Gemara says, Ahu b'Aron k'siv. So the Aron is the Spitz of Kedusha. So if you want to ask me which part of the Mishkan is called a Mikdash, I would say it's the Aron HaBris that had the Shtei Luchos Eidus inside of it. So the B'nai Kohas were in charge of carrying the Aron. There's a lot of miracles took place in that. Anyway, so that's called the Mikdash. That's the Makom HaMakudish B'Yoser. And it's of all the Kalim in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan, that is the super duper holy Kalim. But that doesn't prove that the entire Mishkan is called a Mikdash. Alamei Hacha, V'asuli Mikdash, V'shachanti B'solcham. And this is a reference to the building of the Mishkan, which we read about just 2 days ago at the beginning of Parshas Truma. And the mitzvah to build the Mishkan is called building a Mikdash. Okay, then Rabbosai, we'll go on. Bli Neder tomorrow.